Radio on Berlin.
Okay, so, hey, this is Jason Honey, a.k.a. The Shitty Listener. I am Boy True, and this is Brave Ear Radio, hosted by Radio on Berlin. Welcome to the first installation in a series you want to do on the immediate neighborhood, Oranienstrasse, Cottbus Adam, other locations as well. I'd like to focus on people who've been here for a while, have contributed to the neighborhood, and also observed the neighborhood change. Our first guest is David Pollack.
Hi.
From San Francisco, California. David,
correct.
You and I are both from San Francisco. We've been here for quite a while. You've been here a little bit longer than me.
Yeah, December 1981 is when I came here.
Okay. And you've been doing Destiny booking since 1983, if I understand correctly.
Exactly.
Okay, but you don't just do Destiny, you do a few things. So this is kind of what I wanted to talk to you about. Why don't we walk? You can basically tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got here, why you came here.
Well, I think what's funny right now is like we're walking down the Waldemarstrasse, which was cool because we're going to get to what used to be the Cassette 36 or also Front Kino afterwards, which inevitably I was looking for a bigger office at some point for the music. Because agencies started growing, because all of a sudden everybody was saying that punk is dead. And then I was working with bands like Offspring and Green Day, and so it obviously wasn't dead. And people got surprised because they didn't see that coming, but it was kind of a music that I understood because I come from that California punk background. But right here is an interesting thing, like what you're looking at on our way to this is what used to be the Born to Be Wild, which became the Hell's Angels live-in center. And
Hell's Angels, really?
Yeah, it was. This used to be the building that they lived in, but still I think a lot of them still live in it, but you know, we're talking about a long time ago, so these people generally backed out of that world, or they're living normal lives. They have tattoo shops, doing normal business and what have you. But so that used to be the spot where they were. Coming up here on the 33, this was like I was saying, this was I remember playing shows as well as being at shows. I remember funny things, like a friend of mine at Warren's out, you know, already, and the police used to be like people you hated, you know what I mean? And they were taught to be aggressive. Like they would see a punk on the street or somebody alternative, they'd just like try and grab you and beat the fuck out of you. But the difference between Berlin and in San Francisco is I got in trouble in San Francisco because of helping somebody. But the difference is that in Berlin, the cops kept trying to push people down, and instead of them being conformant, they said, you know what, fuck you, because they got pushed too far, and they started like hitting back. But I just remember in this place, which actually was where my office was, in the back.
The 33?
The 33, yep. You want to walk in there?
Yeah,
or not?
Let's go over.
Okay. So in this place, I remember like a friend of mine, like I said, he had warrants out, and you know, the cops would storm in and arrest everybody and beat you up a little bit and bring you into the station and then let you go at 5 a.m. when you had no way of actually getting home, which was great fun. But he just took all of the cables for the PA connection and made like a rope and climbed out the back to get away. We all got arrested. Here's the funniest thing though. We got arrested one of the times, and it was also here, and the police had us in the wagon and they're beating us up. And the more you talk, you
right
know,
here, right
yeah,
here,
yeah, right out front. The more you talk, the more you're gonna get hurt. And there was one guy in there, he didn't belong to us. And he's like, I didn't do anything. Why the fuck am I in here? And everybody's saying, just shut the fuck up, man. The more you talk, the worse it's gonna get. Cause at this point we're already in the police wagon.
Right.
And he kept talking. One of my friends said, can I take care of this? Cause this guy started saying, I'm the son of the police chief. And like, fuck up. Just shut the fuck up, man. And then he said to the police officers, can I take care of this? And they said, sure, go ahead if you want to beat each other up. So he, you know, punched him a couple times, not too hard, just so that he got the drift that you should shut the fuck up. Mm-hmm. Turns out that it actually was the son of the police commissioner at that time. Just a funny story. Mm-hmm. All these memories are coming to me as we walk through this, you know, this little zone. But I went here, and I couldn't really recognize it because everything was getting renovated. You know, all
sure.
The houses were kind of destroyed, and a lot of us in the alternative scene and the squatted houses were renovating the whole buildings, and this whole place was getting renovated out, and they were offering me the first floor, and I didn't recognize it at first.
In the Hinterhof here, in this one in back.
Yeah, yeah, and I went up the one stairwell, and it had already been renovated, so you couldn't tell. Then I came back down the other side, and there was all the graffitis, and I'm like, oh, shit, this used to be the front kino in the second floor. And they're like, yeah, there was some punk thing, and I'm like, no, I totally know where I am now, because I realize, and I'm like, I want the second floor. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a couple months more. I'm like, I don't care. I have to have it. So right up there.
On the second floor?
Yeah, on the second floor.
Okay, so that was Destiny. That was Destiny Booking?
Yeah, after, you know, originally it was Cassette 36 in
front of me.
But when I realized where I was, I'm like, oh my God, I played right here. This is where the stage used to be. Mm-hmm. So I set up my table right there.
Sure.
But yeah, in the corner, like this corner here, we put a little wall up. The one that bends over here, it's a big space.
Yeah.
That was a kitchen. This was all the music agency, and over here was Fat Records.
Fat Records was up here, over here to the left.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We just put up a little wall so we couldn't hear each other yelling on the phone, otherwise you can't concentrate. But yeah, they were over there.
And now, by this point, shows up there had ceased.
There was no. Shows had ceased a long time. This whole place got completely renovated.
So how long was Destiny here?
Oh, God, maybe 91 or 2. For sure, 12 years.
Okay, 91.
Maybe longer. Originally I was directly in Besetzereck, right on Heinischplatz, and it was a small office, but just as the music agency started to grow, we had more employees and we couldn't fit in that office anymore. So. Mm-hmm.
Were you buddies or were you tight or familiar at all with the Mute Records people from over here around the corner? On the Engelbecken, Mute Records was there.
Yeah,
Bad
no,
Seeds,
I remember
Denny
Mute.
Lane, Barry Adamson.
Yeah, I didn't really have much to do with them. But I do remember them, and
apples
I'm sure
and oranges
I knew them.
In some respects, I guess. Yeah. Okay. And now, why did Fat Records come over here,
how did you get involved with Fat Records? Well, I mean, obviously, me and Mike have been friends for a long time, and since '88, and they just needed somebody to do all the marketing and the distribution for them in Europe, and he asked me because we were friends, and I said, you know, okay, whatever. You know, you're going to have to pay the people that are going to be working there, and, you know, I subsidize it, so I prepaid for it, and just every month we send him a bill for, like, what had been spent, and obviously, you know, we made a whole budget of, like, how much we would like to spend, but it's not our money. It's his money, so he needed to give us a go.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. I only found out recently that Fat had been here for a while. I did not know that. I've been in the street now for 2 years.
Okay.
It seems more and more as I give walking tours through the area, it's always individuals, private individuals, like you right now, who are coming out and saying, what are you guys talking about? Did you hear about what was going on over here for the last, for about 4 years, back in like, you know, 86 to 90? I said, no, I didn't hear about that. Didn't know about that. So, okay, so we're aging ourselves now. 1970 San Francisco. At that point in time, my sister was living out in the avenues. Okay. I was staying with my sister at that point in time on weekends whenever I could. Was aware of punk going on in San Francisco. Way too young to actually go to that stuff, but any chance I got, I loved
77, 78.
78, 79. Yeah, yeah. I loved to sneak away, go to the poster shops, go to the head shops,
in North Beach.
Columbus and North Beach. And then I would see these people walking around all over the place, and I would notice the graffiti. Now, I know you're probably about a year or two older than me, I'm not exactly sure, but you grew up in the Mission around then, right?
Yeah, I mean, we lived everywhere. We lived up in North Beach for a little while, but it just, like, it started out in the nicer neighborhoods, like Panassas Ashbury, and then we were in the Panhandle. But as rent slowly grew, which was still ridiculously cheap compared to what it would be now, my family had to move because I was a child of multimillionaires, so meaning we had Medi-Cal and food stamps. Yeah. And so my parents did work sometimes, but definitely weren't making enough money to live.
Okay.
That was a, you know, like, we'll stick with the punk thing, but that was a cool thing that it's hard to believe, but actually they did have a good social system to help people who were not earning enough money. In the early 70s, and in came Reaganomics and fucked that all up. But, you know, the punk rock thing, it was like, for me, it was cool. I hung up, you know, as young, didn't give a fuck kind of person. And I hung out with some bikers for a little while. I was like, what is it? The the junior, you know what I mean, like the young guy that hung out. And then I found from the amusement park right next door to the Mouvoir Gardens, there was a bunch of, you know, it was, back then it was...
arcade next to the map? Yeah, that exactly. Old arcade? Oh, God.
Exactly. And I used to play air hockey there with my friend.
They smelled like cum. From all the peep show parlors up and down the street.
Around the corner.
The smell would just seep in. Oh, God.
You know, so I used to play air hockey, and then, like, the In the City single came out. I guess it was at some point in 77, and they put that on the jukebox. And, you know, when I hear from the jam, and when I hear that now, I think, like, yeah, that's kind of poppy, you know, and moddy.
Sure.
But back then, it just made me super aggressive, you know. Uh-huh. And so I started getting into punk, and right next door was the Mouvoir Gardens. And all these people were a little bit older than me because they were all going to the Art Institute. So I'm a young teenager, and they're all in their early 20s. So I figured if I hung out there, you know, I could go get some drinks. And, you know, if I kind of looked like them, it would work. And I hung out with them. And I just realized that this was a totally different life, and I was way more connected to them than I was connected to any bikers. You know, just me, not to say anything bad about bikers. That's a brotherhood, and I'm sure most of them are great people when they're not killing people. But I just like that whole punk rock identity. You can do whatever the fuck you want.
Right.
Not like militant, like there's no orders that you have to take. If you don't like what somebody says or the way they act, then fuck them. You don't need to hang out with them, you know? So
sure.
So,
but you also got into a band that eventually brought you to Europe. Is that correct?
No. The band, like, I played for fun in a couple of bands. I sang in a couple of bands, but I was never staying with a band than more than a couple of gigs.
Okay.
So when I came here, I ended up getting in bands.
Okay. So you came here in December of 81?
Yeah.
And what... band, did you start a band or did you join a band?
No, I started a band. People asked me to sing, and so I ended up starting a band with other people together. You know, obviously,
yeah.
I didn't start that first band alone. Like, these were other musicians that wanted to play music.
Okay, and was this right here in Kreuzberg, in this neighborhood?
The very first band was in Schöneberg.
Okay.
And we were in squatted houses there. I ended up moving to Kreuzberg, but...
What band was that?
The first one was called Sick Pleasure.
Okay.
The second one was called Porno Patrol.
Okay.
And the third one was No Allegiance.
Did the people here know that there was a Sick Pleasure in San Francisco?
No, at that point, absolutely not. I think that we started just about the same time, and it was kind of funny because Sal and me were in the Mission. We were talking, or maybe we were at Target Video, who was a drummer.
Okay.
And we were talking about what would be a cool name for a band, and it was before I had left, or way before I had left. And somehow we came up with that name.
Yeah.
And ironically, I guess we both started bands about the same time.
Are you talking about English style?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to say that their band was better.
The cobwebs are sweeping away here talking about this. Wow. First it's the smells, now it's the names. So, okay, you know, there was even a Sick Pleasure in Texas, if I'm not mistaken. But that's a whole other, that's a completely different discussion.
That's
so funny. You came here, you started these bands.
Yeah.
Okay. And if I'm not mistaken... or as I understood it, you were also touring here for a while, okay? Through Europe?
Yeah. No, we even, it was 85 or 86, we also did a 7-week tour of the United States.
Cool.
I started finding people, actually, the first time looking for local promoters, me and Dietmar, my guitar player from Porno Patrol, or at that point he was a bass player, hitchhiked through Germany and into other places in Europe, and we went to the venue and talked to them, and
cool.
That's how you did it. I mean, you didn't have, like,
internet or any of this shit. You had ballpoint pens and notepads and telephones.
And even like, phone calls, and, you know, you call a club, and you get, like, a half an hour... discussion of what shows they have, and then you can leave a message after the beep tone, but obviously the tape was always full, so you couldn't leave a message. So you had to actually physically go there.
Yeah. And talk to them. Okay, sure. Now, this prompted you to then start your own booking agency.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, at first, like, nobody wanted to do... Here's a place, too. It was Café Grands, right up on top of there. Yeah,
Of the peach-colored building?
Yeah, this big new fancy hotel here.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Up there.
And the third floor, there was a cafe. And, you know, you had to look for spaces because nobody wanted to be affiliated with punk because punk hadn't broke in the
I'd
in
been there. I and, was there in 87.
So I did shows.
Shit, that's where that place was.
So I did shows there. And then we'd just bring a stage in and rent a PA. And, you know, luckily they had an elevator. You only needed to carry a certain amount of shit. But... and you would always be looking for venues, and a lot of people didn't want to be affiliated with punk because they were just thinking about, you know, oh, it's just a bunch of drugged out drunks. And
yeah.
And so I'm like, yeah, but there's another breed. There's this breed and that breed. Not to say that we weren't drugged out drunks, but we were productive drugged out drunks, you know. So and so it was one of those things always I felt like you had to take it in your own hands. And it wasn't because I really wanted to do concerts. It was because there was a need for somebody to do it. So I just said, fuck it, if nobody else is gonna do it, I'm gonna do it. And then we had a whole group of people, which I have to give all of them credit to, who worked with us together. And always I would just say, like, okay, if the show loses money, I'll take it. And if the show, because I was working construction, I was making pretty good money. And if the show makes money, we have two choices. I could split it all up, but it's just like a little bit for each person. Or we can just put it in a pile and go and eat and drink for whatever the money is, like whatever you prefer. And we take a vote. And of course, the majority of the people will go like, oh, okay, let's just go eat and drink, you know, and then they could, the girls could bring their guy friend or and the guys bring their girlfriend, and then we just blow it pretty much. And that was that. So it didn't really have anything to do with money, and it didn't really even have to do with the fact that I necessarily wanted to do shows all the time. It had to do with the fact that I wanted shows to happen and nobody else was doing it. So that was the first step into it. And then the first American bands that came were asking me, like, Dave, you're American, you toured, like, how do we do this? And I'd start explaining to them all the things they needed to do, said I'd give them all the connections, and they said, it sounds like too much work. Could you do this for us? And at first I just did it for fun to help them out because I respected them and liked the bands. Scream, MDC, like all of these old, you know, that old punk bands, Youth Brigade, yeah. And so, I don't know, at some point then in the band that I was playing in, we finally got to a point where it's sad, where I think the best record we ever would have had, we had to scratch because two of the members became heroin addicts, and it just became too difficult for me to deal with. And at that point, I just went, you know what, fuck it. I'm going to take this plunge and dive in and become an agent. So working on the other side and just doing all the shows, not working on the other side, but working on the organization side instead of the musician side. And that's how I ended up where I am today still.
Okay, and you also have a record company.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Destiny is also, it's booking, but it's also a
record company.
You release music.
Yeah.
Okay, and Yako works for you still?
Yeah, yeah, Yako's Frontier Group still works for me, or now he's an Akt I'm a Hunahetsen, but yeah.
Exactly, okay. And aside from that, a couple of restaurants. Yeah. Let's talk about that. Guys, hold on real quick. Cut, cut, cut. Bravia Radio, Radio on Berlin. Okay, sitting here with Dave Pollack. Here we go again. So I'm just curious, starting Destiny back in 83, your impressions of this neighborhood?
For me, just coming to Berlin, like the initial drive for it was, well, multiple things. I had a serious fucking drug problem and I was hanging out at the Mission, and I'm really glad I came here because I cleaned up immediately as soon as I hit it. I was with my... my dad and my stepmother for 5 days. Oh, first winter. I still refuse to wear long sleeve shirts. You know what I mean? I still got short sleeve. Mm-hmm. I came here with way too thin clothes, Dickies, and a short sleeve shirt. It was minus 20. I fucking got sick for 5 days. Maybe a combination of the getting off the cocaine and the weather change. But and then I ended up moving into a squatted house, and this whole thing of like...
Berlin seems like an interesting place to have to come to get away from drugs.
It wasn't the plan. The reason was... Yeah, yeah, exactly. Definitely because of the whole heroin thing. But my plan was just to get away and visit my dad, and then, you know, it just happened that I had been doing too much coke for too long, and sleep deprivation made me aggressive, and probably hanging out in the mission probably didn't help either,
because
I was hanging out with
absolutely.
A lot of wrong people. But so I came here, and then this whole thing with the squatted houses and rebuilding the buildings and all the connections that they had, and just the revolutionary things that were going on. There was a lot of anarchists, and we were fighting the police, and that just kind of like, that was like for a child's Disneyland. It was a teenager punk's Disneyland. You
Got
know
it.
What I mean? So I just felt like I was nabbing, like
the punk
first,
dream world.
The first playland. Yeah, the first demo I ended up was Auntie Hague, you know, and then all of a sudden everybody started running when the police came, and I'm like, why are you running? Because before you were fighting them. And nobody said anything, because back then I couldn't speak German yet. I just got here, and they're all running away. And I'm wondering why, and then all of a sudden this big missile starts firing in my direction, and I caught up to them real quick because I started running as well, because I didn't know what the fuck it was. And it was a giant gas grenade, you know, because they had those like bazooka things, and they were firing them. But it was wonderful being here in that time. You know, too, like there were so many alternative people because of the fact that you had a mandatory military, and people were...
West Berlin became a safe haven for all those conscript German army dudes who had no interest in German army life whatsoever.
But they get their service letter in the mail, and they go, fuck that, I'm moving to Berlin. And of course, all the interesting alternative guys moving to learn, the woman followed. So it was a great place to be. You could find work easily. You could live in a squatted house, and especially, you know, I like the productive ones where we were rebuilding. That's where I actually learned a lot about construction. And the perfect place at that time in my life.
I like to describe Oranienstrasse when I first saw it as a kid. Aside from, well, what is now the Clash, I can't remember what that place was called back in the day, but that's where social unrest played in Berlin. But I ended But I ended up coming back with my girlfriend at the time for about 2 or 3 weeks. We were living down here at the end of Adalbertstrasse, directly on the wall. I can remember hearing the East German border dudes speaking to each other, not via radio, shortwave radio, but rather with bullhorns. Okay? So we had to contest with that all night long. It was freezing cold. Everything just completely smelled like brown coal and diesel.
Well, that's what you were hiding. Hiding. GIs like maybe right on the border, but this was a no-go zone. Kreuzberg 36 was a no-go zone for GIs because, you know, the chance of you getting the shit beaten out of you if you were one were extremely high.
My point was maybe I was seeing them in Schöneberg or maybe in Neukölln. I can't remember exactly, but all of Oranienstrasse seemed like it was boarded up. Lots of the places were like coal depots where you could go and get your brown coal.
Of course.
And there were little shops, bakers, butchers, cobblers, furniture repair place, which seemed like it was catering primarily to the local, for lack of a better word, Muslim community, Turks and Arabs. That Möbel Klitzka, that political bookstore, it was there. I definitely remember that. Maybe the Golden Hahn was there. The Esso, of course, was there. But it seemed like everything else was just boarded up.
It's funny, though, too, like, Esso being what it is, you know, it was Turkish run in that point. Like, I, you know, they were definitely alternative, but I think a lot of the times, like with all the cool punk shows, they didn't even know what they had. You know what I mean? Like, they knew it did well, and I think they were alternative people as well. That's why, you know, when they saw the vibe, they were into it.
Right. When did you begin to see the neighborhood really begin to change?
Oh, my God.
90s already?
Definitely.
Late 90s?
No, early 90s, things were already starting to change, but people were fighting, you know, against it. Like, here used to be a kind of yuppie furniture store, and back then there was extreme resistance to that. And so, you know, their window was getting smashed all the time. But yeah, maybe that was the mid-90s, I guess, when, you know, people were trying to move in, and at first they were faced with a lot of confrontation. And, you know, nowadays, like, that's gone.
Right. What about these Naunienstrasse gang guys over here? Did you have to contend with them at all?
Well, I trained a little bit with some of them for a little
while. That's right. You're a martial arts expert?
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a little group called the 36 Boys.
Yeah.
And
they don't exist anymore?
Not that I know of. I'm sure there's still members doing things, you know, but not that I know of. But also there's been multiple generations of them. So like when I see the documentaries right now over what them showing what the 36 boys were and saying that these were the hard ones, they look to me more like the soft ones. It was a generation before that were like more like a real street gang. You
okay.
Know? Uh-huh. I mean, I think the generation after them came another run of heavier people.
My son is completely fascinated by this stuff. That's why I'm picking your brain about it.
Okay.
Okay.
But they were, you know, as in San Francisco, the Lords SF were the gang. And, mm-hmm. and for this area too, the 36 boys were definitely mm-hmm. the gang mm-hmm. of Coitsburg 36, without mm-hmm. a doubt. What I did like about it is that 1st of May demo where the police provocated. I watched and maybe was involved in part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Disclaimer, maybe.
The 87 one was the big one, if I'm not mistaken, and, right? And, the huge riot.
Yeah, yeah. And it was the first time that where I saw like a lot of the alternatives, punkers, and Turkish all mm-hmm. come together as one. Because, mm-hmm. you know, the police really pushed it too far, you mm-hmm. know? And so we had like a little riot on our hands. People mm-hmm. were smashing windows and, you know, trying to light up police cars.
Right.
So.
Right.
But that was a cool vibe because it all came together. Before
I've heard
it was
about
like...
Places, I've heard about places like the Wiener Blut, that cool little old Kreuzberg, old West Berlin looking rock and roll bar on Wienerstrasse. That was one of the safe places where people would run to. If the cops were getting too nuts, people would take shelter in Wiener Blut for a couple hours.
A lot of places were like safe havens. There was a lot, you know, because this was an alternative neighborhood. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so talking about the neighborhood changing. I know you are owner or part owner of Santa Maria,
owner.
Right? Yeah. The owner, okay. Yeah. But not just, you've got two or three other restaurants?
Yeah, yeah, I've got, what is it, Punk Rock Pizza Mafia, more or less, which contains in total Casolari, Idui Forni. This is where I joined in. Casolari I wasn't partner in, but mm-hmm. Idui Forni I joined in.
That's the one in Friedrichshain? Or the one
No. And it was Casolari is the first one. Then Idui Forni was in Prenzlauer with, and this point, like in Schönhausallee, at this point, that was considered not a good neighborhood mm-hmm. to have a restaurant, really. Mm-hmm. There wasn't that much going on there yet. But it was a standalone building, and we had a giant terrace. So we're going to get a standalone building with a giant terrace with offices above you where you can make noise till late in the middle of Berlin, nowhere. So that's, you know, why we took on that one. Then right afterwards on. Was Iwer Trovo, which is in Friedrichshain, which mm-hmm. I wasn't involved in. I just, like... recommended people that, you know, that previously worked with us that I thought should become the managers. And then Pindor Mauro, my partner, opened mm-hmm. Girodiski, also in Friedrichshain, which I came in later on, and Piazza Bra, which is Amkudam.
How many do you have?
Well, I say, we've given a bunch of these to the employees.
That's what I wanted to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
So you practice profit sharing, if I'm not mistaken? Or
yeah,
how does
yeah,
it
we
work?
Did. We did like a certain amount of profit sharing, and then at some point, we would pass it on. We wouldn't give the restaurants out for free, but for considerably less than what we could have made if we sold them normally. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea was you'd pick somebody in service and somebody in the kitchen, you'd observe them for a year or two and then say, okay, keep doing what you're doing, and after a certain amount of years it's yours and we'll walk away and we'll open up something else, you know. Mm-hmm. which went fine for a
That's
while
neat.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, the ones that like I'm still a silent partner in is Girodiski.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess somehow I'm affiliated still to Piazza Bra, but you know, as far as I'm concerned, like, Dewey Forney was the big one, Casolari, the first one, and Dewey Forney were the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I felt a lot more involved, and later I just didn't have the time anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and Mauro's been the captain running the ship. Mm-hmm. Diego's another partner mm-hmm. Who's been in there.
Okay, all right, good to know. I haven't been there forever, but talking about it, when we're done, I think I might have to go over there and chomp a pie.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Okay, so... are you planning on any kind of future culinary project?
No, I mean, right now, I also have the Peruvian called Tupac, which is over near Meringdam.
What is it?
A Peruvian restaurant.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh.
right now, basically, you know, I'm so busy with the touring part that I'm don't have time for the restaurants really anymore.
Yeah.
Ariel, my cook, is kind of running that, or not kind of, he's running that place. He's originally from Cafe Central, which is always listed on the top 10 list of the world restaurants.
Fantastic.
So he's an amazing he's an amazing cook. Mm-hmm. We got a Michelin bib, so Michelin recommendation.
Wow.
But gastronomy right now, since COVID, is really difficult. Like,
sure.
No matter what you do,
I wanted
when
to
it's
ask,
full, you're still losing money.
I wanted to ask, how did you get through COVID with all this? Okay, you don't want to tell? All right.
Yeah, barely. I don't want to tell. I mean, I just luckily had, you know, I mean, later some help came from the government, mm-hmm. for sure, but mm-hmm. that wasn't enough. And mm-hmm. I'm not a give up person, so I like kept people pretty much on payroll, mm-hmm. in the hopes that shit would reopen.
Sure.
In hindsight, that was a mistake. I should have just, like some of my friends did, shut everything down, and if people wanted to come back after it was over, they could come back.
Right.
Not because it was just all the stress, and also the financials of mm-hmm. it were fucking ridiculous.
Right.
And, I mean, I would have rather just had 2 years off.
That's what I kind of did. That's sort of how I got into expanding my
horizons.
My tour guide horizons.
Okay.
Checking more places out, finding out more, what I could do better. I didn't really take COVID too seriously at first. My attitude, Adrian's heard this a million times, my attitude was, if I don't see the army on the streets, and if I don't see tent hospitals set up in Gerlitzer Park, you know, when people talk about the 1920s in the States with the Spanish flu, I'm not really gonna take it too seriously. Now, when it came around the following winter, I took it way more seriously then, especially when I started finding about what happened to friends back in the States. Some people you might even know, who were ICU, on the ventilators, couple of months, all that kind of shit. Then I took it a little bit more seriously, but the first time around, no, I didn't. But anyway, I digress. So, booking, who are you working with right now? Whose tours are you working with? I kind of think of MAD all the time in terms of booking.
You know, they've been around for almost as long as I have.
That's who booked Social Unrest.
I mean, I think that, I think for them it was like the later 80s when they really kicked in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, we always did more of the Californian punk, but not every, you know, not all. Like, I've worked with Deftones and Faith No More, like the more bigger bands, Green mm-hmm. Day, Offspring. I managed to get myself fired from one or the other of them by telling them I didn't need to work with people with that kind of attitude, which in hindsight is stupid because now I work with people who you would never think, but their attitude's worse. And mm-hmm. I'm just used to dealing with it more as a business,
sure.
You know, as well. You know, and of course, if a bigger band, if a bigger band can finance all the projects that you want to do,
mm-hmm.
why not? You know what I mean? Just suck it up and make the money off the bigger band, and then you can finance all the other projects that you see more of a future in. But you know, I mean, God, I'm thankful for all the bands, like, you know, Lagwagon, Pennywise, NoFX, working with Circle Jerks right now.
Well, okay,
you know, like Bad Religion. Right. You know, like
so you did the whole Epitaph. You did the whole Epitaph Fat thing,
and a lot more. Snapcase. You know, like I ventured into Thursday. You know, there was worked. Did all the squats for Rage Against the Machine.
Wow.
Worked with Faith No More. Worked with Deftones for quite mm-hmm. a while. You know,
wow.
Like so, it's just. Worked with Weezer in the beginning. So,
okay.
You know, it just as soon as I found something where I went, like with Green Day, before they released Dookie, I got a cassette of it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody sent it to me, and I'm like, holy shit, this is amazing. And I flew out to their then manager and sold them on the idea that I need to be the person to do it. And mm-hmm. they're like, well, there's a lot of large agents in England because they were just starting to figure out that some of these bands were gonna do good.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we give it to you instead of them? And I just said, because this is my music and I understand it. Nobody else that's talking to you right now has a fucking clue of what this music is and what's gonna become
where it comes from. And,
and I had no idea it was gonna get that big. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, really, it was even surprising for me. All of a sudden, who's this guy, Dave Pollack? Who the fuck is Destiny? You know, like mm-hmm. bigger agents mm-hmm. are looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And why does he have multiple top 10 bands? And mm-hmm. like, I couldn't answer that question except for the fact that I knew the music was great, Mm-hmm. And that's all I cared about. I mm-hmm. wanted to do a great job because that's what your job is as a music agent, mm-hmm. is to represent the fucking band. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you love the music, you're going to do a better job. Mm-hmm. So,
all right. Do you, are you affiliated or do you work closely with Cortex in any capacity?
They're friends. It was funny because for a while I had also your Search and Destroy, which you probably don't realize has always been my shop, though I haven't always been running it. Mm-hmm. But I, what is it?
Are you still, is it still your shop?
Yeah, I led it to Arna. Mm-hmm. And just charge the rent that I actually would pay because I refuse it to be anything else but a core skate shop. Mm-hmm. So,
fantastic.
On the lease and
importante.
On the lease and mm-hmm. in reality, I'm still the owner of it. Mm-hmm. Only I have other people running it for mm-hmm. me and running it the way they want. And my only stipulation is it to stay a core skate shop. That's mm-hmm. it. Like mm-hmm. Generally, I've lost money on it, even with other people running it for me. Mm-hmm. Because all I'm asking for is the rent mm-hmm. and the expenses that I actually have, and the same price that I pay. Mm-hmm. But I'd just rather somebody else run it because I don't have the time.
Sure.
You know, but yeah.
I plug it on my tours constantly. Yeah. It's the skate shop in town that I plug.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are the first core skate shop in Berlin, mm-hmm. like only skate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a couple other shops. They had a little mix mash, but we're the first core skate shop. We had a team, like a bunch of people like Arna as well, you mm-hmm. know. And I used to involve also skateboarding and BMX into the music thing. And then, mm-hmm. you know, like later on came that Warped Tour in the U.S. And then when I saw that coming up, because I wanted to do a tour of like that myself, and I had already integrated some like little skate contests or right. local contests mm-hmm. with music bands. Mm-hmm. And then when I saw that, I'm like, wow, this is a great idea. So I ended up working with them and bringing it to Europe a few times.
Right.
Because it was something that was already standing, you know, and I was giving him a lot of the bands that I had because mm-hmm. that's the kind of bands that he needed. At some point, we came in a little disagreement of the direction it should go. And then I just went, all right, you do your thing. These are the bands that I have set up, and now I've got a tour called Deconstruction, you know, mm-hmm. which was like more core. Like mm-hmm. He mixed the music a little mm-hmm. more, got away from the punk and ska yeah. thing, and went into like more hip hop and, you know, other stuff, mm-hmm. which I guess today would combine better, but and also had some real pop bands and some stuff that I wasn't into as much. And so we went our separate ways. He didn't come back to Europe, and that was that.
Do you still live in the neighborhood?
I live right now on the border of the neighborhood. So the extension of Olauerstrasse, which is called Friedel. So I'm on the border to where I'm in.
You're like in Kreuzkern.
I wouldn't call it Kreuzkern because fuck Kreuzkern. I'd call it Neukern. And it was so funny because what happened with me is a friend of mine makes alternative movies and alternative videos.
He
Philip, who worked with Atari Teenage Riot back mm-hmm. in the day and mm-hmm. did all of their like mm-hmm. Stage slideshows mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And he was saying, like, hey, there's this area where you can get a better cut apartment mm-hmm. for a cheaper price. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't want to live in fucking Neukern because back then it was, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know, it wasn't so alternative. It was just a bunch of, you know, older.
Got it.
Conservative, old school Berliner people, which is fine, but
Hobrichstrasse used to be beautiful, man.
Right mm-hmm. across the street from mm-hmm. us used to be Pigalle, which was the mm-hmm. the pub with the old mm-hmm. woman, but mm-hmm. the whorehouse with mm-hmm. the old woman. But then I went and looked at it, and he was right. It was like a better apartment for a better price, which now is the opposite. Mm-hmm. Now that zone is definitely more expensive than right. Kreuzberg, but at
you
that
could
point,
see it way back then, man. Hobrichstrasse was just stunning. So
in theory, I'm like, what is that? Maybe 70 yards into Neukern. Mm-hmm. And I've been there for 26 years now, I believe.
Right on. Friedelstrasse, just on a final note, there was a little squat Gemeinschaftszentrum there for a while.
No, not
about
a squat.
About 5 or 6 years ago. It got shut down.
Okay, I knew about, like, there was this whole thing where my buddy Philip used to be and a whole yeah. bunch of like alternative filmmakers, and they had this like collective,
maybe that's what it was,
two houses further back, yeah, and they were paying rent, but it was really cheap mm-hmm. and at some point somebody else bought the building and tried to throw everybody out, or pretty much did,
and
eventually.
To massive protests, right? I seem to recall. I think.
Oh, you're talking about the cafe, maybe.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, there was a little bar that was there, but that wasn't squatted. The places, people were paying rent, but it was just old rent.
Okay.
You know, so.
That might have been what it was.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Dave, thank you very much.
Yeah. Too much information. You'll have to edit the fuck out of it.
This is Jason Honey, a.k.a. Boy True. I am the Shitty Listener. I've been walking and talking with Dave Pollock.
From Destiny.
Destiny Booking Record Company, as well as a bevy of restaurants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's been a great pleasure.
Don't
Music
forget
agency.
That one.
Thank you very much. Wonderful.
Right on, thank you.
Bravia Radio Berlin. Thank you, Radio On. Thanks, Dave. Yeah, boom, boom, dude.
You have been listening to Radio On Berlin. Yeah!